You still don't get it, do you, boys? There ain't no countries anymore. No more good guys. They're running the whole show. They own everything, the whole planet. They can do whatever they want. What's wrong with having it good for a change? Now, they're going to let us have it good if we just help them. They're going to leave us alone. Let us make some money. You can have a little taste of that good life, too. Now, I know you want it. Hell, everybody does.
You do it to your own kind.
What's the threat? We all sell out every day. Might as well be on the winning team.
Catapult the propaganda.
The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to the Time Shifted Show with the Frog Brothers. Yay! We're talking about Paul and Philip Collins, of course, and the reason I say Time Shifted is because we have no idea what Sunday this is going to be playing on. But we're recording this on Friday, February 29th.
Yes, a leap day. Likely you're
hearing
this,
appropriate for the Frog Brothers.
That's right. Now, again, if you're not
and we say that lovingly.
And we mean that lovingly, because these are a couple of guys who read a lot, think a lot, and come up with some very interesting conclusions, very disturbing conclusions about the connections of the world around us. And that's what we talk about tonight, because they get right to the heart
of what PID Radio is about. And again, that's a very loving way to refer to them. That's what I call them, because the Frog Brothers are my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
And
is it Lost Boys?
Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The two brothers who know everything there is to know about vampires and the dark side from their extensive comic book collection.
Well, Paul and Philip Collins seem to know everything about the dark side with regard to spiritual matters and politics and all sorts of deep topics. Welcome to PID Radio, guys.
Thanks for having us. Thank you, Sharon. By the way, don't forget, no two bloodsuckers go out the same way, but they all go out ugly. So.
That's right. That's right.
That's right.
I think we may have played that audio clip.
We'll have to open up with that clip.
Yeah, we might have done that the last time they were on.
Well, we'll do it again, because it's a good one.
Paul has a new article published at Raiders News Network, The Deep Politics of God Revisited, and that's a phrase that they've used and has been applied to several of the articles that Paul and Philip have written, archived at the Conspiracy Archive. And deep politics is an excellent term for describing what we discuss on PID Radio every week. Because if you're new to PID Radio or you've not heard some of the earlier shows that we've done where we lay down a lot of background, in a nutshell, we believe that there's more going on in the world that meets the eye. What you see in the news, what you read in the newspaper, what you see in the internet news sites, those are just the shadows of the unseen battles taking place. Now, the new article that Paul has is basically an analysis of a murder that took place about 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago to the day, in fact. Paul, who are we discussing here, and why is this murder significant?
Well, the murder was the murder of a father, Father Alfred Coombs. And like you said, it happened back in 98, in March 4th of 98. And Coombs was found dead by a young teacher at his own residence, and he was face down in a puddle of his own blood. His throat had been slit, and nobody was ever found in connection with this murder. They never found a culprit, but there is a body of evidence there that seems to suggest that there was Satanism involved. That there was a mutilated calf, for instance, that was found 15 minutes away from the murder scene. The calf had been killed in a very ritualistic manner. Its throat had been slit. The blood had been drained out of the calf. Its sex organs had been cut off. And anybody that's done any kind of extensive study into satanic cults knows that this is kind of like a calling card for Satanists. It's kind of like a way of leaving their mark to say that we've been here. And we also know that that with many secret societies, if a throat has been cut, it's usually as punishment for revealing a group's secrets. Mm-hmm. And so that might explain why Kuhn's throat was slit, because it was basically somebody's way of saying, hey, this man is guilty of having exposed our operations.
Kind of like the Blood Oaths with Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we know that that Kuhn's closest friends did not believe that the murder was simply some rogue out there that was basically, you know, stealing from his residence, or just some common criminal. Father Malachy Martin revealed about 6 weeks, I'd say, I believe it was, after the murder, he revealed on a radio talk show that he had he claimed on the show that he had inside information about the Kuhn's murder, and that inside information revealed that it was carried out by Luciferians. And Luciferians, they're not your regular everyday devil worshiper, but they are devil worshippers nonetheless. And Father Malachy Martin and Kuhn's were very close. As a matter of fact, along with Father Charles Fiore, the three of them formed kind of a you could describe it as an intel gathering group. They gather intelligence, share it, and analyze it. And doing that kind of stuff, especially within the world that they inhabited, it can be a very dangerous mm-hmm. thing to do. And we know that his murder came right after he had basically made it known that he was going to change the Catholic Family Hour's format. And the Catholic Family Hour was a radio show that he had been doing. And the way that he was going to modify the show was that he was going to begin to veer off into the realm of deviant sex rings within the Catholic Church, going to pedophile priests and into their into the fact that they were more organized than was believed or was portrayed in the mainstream media. In the mainstream media, they get down like one's popping up here, one's popping up there. But what you have really is a highly organized infrastructure within the Catholic Church, a network of these guys, and there's method behind the perversion, and a lot of it has to do with Satanism. Pedophilia is basically the destruction of innocence. Mm-hmm. So, and the ultimate innocent is Jesus Christ. So when the crime of pedophilia is basically it's supposed to be paralleling the desecration of Jesus Christ. We know that he had Malachy Martin on his show several times, and that Malachy Martin would talk about these sex rings. But the night that Kuhn's was murdered, he was passing the mantle on to Father Charles Fiore. Father Fiore was going to take over the Catholic Hour, and Fiore was going to be the one that basically really started to get into the heart of the issue. He was going to look into the satanic pedophile rings within the Catholic Church, and this is where the article really, really takes off.
Well, can I stop you there for just a second?
Sure.
Because mm-hmm. what I'm sure that some of our listeners are thinking the same thing. Hadn't Malachy Martin, and you say he'd appeared on the show too, hadn't some of these accusations already been out there for a while? So is it possible that Fiore had something new to bring to the show, that there was a revelation that had not yet come out?
He could add a whole new dimension to the investigation. Because of the fact that he had participated in a group known as the Council for National Policy, which we've gone over this group before, we've gone into mm-hmm. this topic before. His participation in the CMP put him in a position to collect intelligence on deviant sex rings like never before,
mm-hmm.
because he could. It basically put him in a position where he could collect intel on sex rings within the Catholic Church and outside of the Catholic Church as well. He had been on the CMP's Board of Governors in 82, and he had been a CMP participant in 84 and in 88. He had also taken part in Ed McAteer's Religious Roundtable Council, and Ed McAteer is, of course, a CMP participant, and the Religious Roundtable Council is an important kind of machination offshoot from the CMP. And there are several CMP participants that have also been a part of the Religious Roundtable Council. But it really, his participation in the CMP would allow him to collect a lot of intel on these groups, because several CMP participants have been involved in directly or indirectly with the various deviant sex rings that litter the political landscape. And that could have been a reason why Coons was murdered, was to scare Fiore off the trail and to make him back off of doing this investigation, because his participation in the CMP would allow him to basically show when he went to do the research that the rabbit hole goes a lot deeper than just the Catholic Church. It goes into the Protestant world. It goes into the world of intelligence. It goes into the American political landscape, and it's a lot more complex and a lot more intentional than the mainstream media has presented it to the American public.
Now, I know we've talked about the Council for National Policy before as being sort of a right-wing response to the Council on Foreign Relations, and some very prominent evangelical Christians are associated with the CNP. We'll put a link to that interview. If I remember correctly, we did this on the radio back in Columbia, Missouri. I'll find that, and I'll put the link to it.
Mm-hmm.
But just so that people have an understanding of the scope of the CNP and what it represents, just give us a little background. What is the CNP, and who are some of the prominent people associated with it?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's probably really, really important to say before, you know, question marks start to go up in the audience's mind. The CNP is essentially, it's a religious engineering project. And the individual that was behind this religious engineering project was none other than Nelson Bunker Hunt. Hunt was a board member and a financier of the John Birch Society. And the John Birch Society is very important because it makes all these claims about being opposed to the power elite, and it claims to be exposing the elitist machinations out there, such as the mm-hmm. Bilderbergs, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and actually some of the people that write for them have done really good work. But the truth of the matter is that if you study the group's genesis a little bit more carefully, you find out that JBS is connected to the very same elites that they claim to be fighting. If you look at certain JBS members, such as William Greed or William Benton McMillan or Robert Warren Stoddard, J. Nelson Shepard, guys like this, you find out that they are actually associated with the Council on Foreign Relations, which the New American Magazine, which is the flagship publication of the JBS, they just rail against the CFR in mm-hmm. it. But then you find out that these members are directly or indirectly somehow associated with the CFR, and the CMP basically came about. It was created from the remnants, the leftovers of the JBS domestic surveillance intel gathering arm. They had basically a domestic kind of intelligence gathering wing that was known as the Western Goals Foundation. Nelson Bunker Hunt, again, was the primary mover and shaker behind Western Goals. He was really the financier there, and he ended up putting up the money for the creation of the CMP. And
can I ask you a question about Hunt really quickly?
Sure.
Is he related in any way to John Kerry's wife?
That's
Heinz, sorry. Wrong ketchup.
Yeah. Yeah. But he is related to Lamar Hunt, the former owner of the Kansas City Chiefs, right?
I believe so. If you look into any honest kind of investigation into the JFK assassination, the Hunt's name consistently comes up over and over and over again. And the Hunts have been involved in covert operations of the more nefarious variety, going back for decades at least.
Not Hunt as in E. Howard.
He was definitely Nelson Bunker Hunt was definitely a very dark and sinister kind of individual, and is really, really a main player in what we brought up at the beginning of the show, Deep Politics. He was really a big time practitioner of deep politics. And,
well, I mean that kind of begs the question, or at least I maybe sheds a little light on the question: what does a civic organization like the John Birch Society, you know, a non-government organization, what's it doing with its own intelligence division?
Exactly. I mean, it just comes off bizarre that, you know, this organization that is supposed to simply be about, informing the public and getting people politically active on the grassroots level, all of a sudden they're engaging in something that you would expect the Bundesnachrichtendienst to be involved in, the BND or the FBI or the CIA, or you name the different alphabet groups out there that litter the intelligence the world of intelligence. All of a sudden they're doing these things that you would expect from some shadowy intelligence agency.
And then a little caveat. Paul mentioned the fact that the CNP, the Council on National Policy for National Policy, is a religious engineering project. And one of the reasons being is that many of its members espouse or adhere to the doctrines of dominionism, which is basically a neo-Gnostic neo-Gnostic variation of a neo-Gnostic perversion of Christianity. One of the members of the John Birch Society, Rush Dooney, his last name's Rush Dooney, actually founded Christian Reconstructionism, which acted as the foundation for dominionism. So there you have another tie. Rush Dooney was a member of the John Birch Society, and he basically laid down the basic tenets of dominionism, what would become dominionism, in a philosophy known as Christian Reconstructionism.
And that's going to probably play very heavily into what's going on with the current race for the presidency, because we have a man like Michael Huckabee, and Huckabee has basically professed a lot of neo-Confederate ideas. For instance, in Arkansas, he said that he would never be responsible for taking down the Confederate flag, and he was a big believer in the Confederate flag and in all that it symbolizes. The two of us personally believe there was nothing legitimate about the Confederacy. It was about disunion and about the destruction of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But the neo-Confederate belief system has a lot of overlap with Christian Reconstructionism.
Yeah, not only that, but one of Michael Huckabee's chief foreign policy advisors is none other than Frank Gaffney, who is the CFR.
True. Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, he was invited to speak for the CFR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he also said that his other foreign policy advisor was
Richard Haass.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Richard Haass, who's the president of the CFR. So, yeah,
yeah, it's president pretty strong of the connection. CFR. And if anybody's interested, he's got an article. Richard Haass has an article out there that addresses specifically the topic of national sovereignty, and he basically says, look, national sovereignty has to be weakened. National sovereignty has to be eventually subordinated to the sovereignty of some supranational entity, some mm-hmm. ubiquitous, all-powerful global entity. And this is interesting because, I mean, the CMP typically tries to hawk itself off as, opposed to globalization, anti-globalist. But the fact that Gaffney and Haass are working together to advise Huckabee on what his, foreign policy would be should he win the presidency, which I don't think he will. But it just tells me that the CMP is a little bit disingenuous about its anti-globalist stance.
But Phil's writing an article currently about that whole the philosophical underpinnings of that whole of what the CMP believes, and Mike Huckabee's his participation in the same belief system, and that's going to knock your socks off when it finally comes out, but. But back to this particular topic, Derek, you said there at the beginning about how the CMP basically presents itself as kind of a conservative alternative to the Council on Foreign Relations. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the first governing board of the CMP, and you find no less than three CFR members on it. Mm-hmm. You find George F. Gilder, you find Dr. Edward Teller, Guy Vanderjagt. And there was other members of the CMP who were members of the CFR, the overlapping membership there. One individual would be J. Peter Grace. He was both CMP and CFR. And he's another really important practitioner of deep politics. He was really into deep political practices.
Sovereign Military Order of Malta, too. One of the Knights mm-hmm. of Malta, yeah.
Oh, yes, yes. But like I said, a lot of these CMP heavyweights have been really close to or involved in some way with deviant sex rings that we see all throughout the American political landscape. And, I can name off a few examples as we go along, but just allow you to, lead wherever you want to go with the discussion.
Well, as we're talking about, the influence of what seems to be a network of pedophiles in positions of influence in the United States mm-hmm. and around the world, we probably ought to touch on that. We don't want to sensationalize it, but I think we need to make clear.
Can I ask a question before
sure,
we go
sure.
there,
yeah.
though, before we actually start talking about the pedophilia and the rings and mm-hmm. all of that stuff? Can you explain to our listeners who may not understand, especially if they're new to PID radio, why these so-called political entities would be involved in what amounts to deep sex magic?
Well, I mean, when you say deep sex magic, I guess you're referencing the fact that there's a belief system that exists amongst the power elite that is different than the belief system that the average American believes. Is that what you're referencing?
Well, pretty much. I mean, of course, we look at everything. The PID radio, PID stands for Peering into Darkness, in case the new listeners don't know. We believe that behind what we can see with our senses, our human senses, is a world that's here. We just can't see it, but we are impacted by it. And, of course, it's the supernatural battle that's taking place between God and fallen angels.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
there are humans who have aligned themselves with those fallen angels, believing that they are going to attain power through that. And
yeah.
some of the ways that they do that to be rewarded with that power or to open certain gateways to allow them to access that power is through sexual magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the people amongst in the higher up the global food chain, the power elite, a lot of them publicly they espouse either Christianity or Judaism or Islam. One of the Abrahamic faiths as their religion, but then you look at their behavior privately, or you look at it when it's away, when they're away from the when from the public eye, and you find out that they are actually the adherents of Luciferianism under its current manifestation, its philosophical manifestation, which is humanism. And humanism, of course, holds that man is in a state of becoming, and that there was no God in the beginning, but that there will be a God in the end of history, and that God will be humanity in its sum total. Mm-hmm. And pedophilia, again, like I was saying earlier, it's mainly about it symbolizes the destruction of Christ, because Christ is the ultimate innocent. He was born innocent. He remained innocent throughout his entire life, so when you engage in the destruction of innocence, as you do with pedophilia, it's symbolizing the destruction of Christ. And so, there, like you said, there is this religious and spiritual significance to the act, especially when it happens amongst elites, sex rings. They're mm-hmm. they're making a statement. It's not just sexual gratification, like you're saying. They're making a very profound religious statement. Right. So you know that's the other purpose for these kind of sex rings, and I refer to them in the article as deviant sex rings, because there's also adults involved, and there's lots of adult prostitutes that are involved. So that people don't just think that it's pedophile rings. It involves people of all ages. And another reason for them is the purpose of blackmail and the purpose mm-hmm. of just keeping everybody in the establishment in line and going with the agenda, so to speak. So if somebody starts to get out of line, you can just have some pictures surface at some point down the line. You know, and so it's less likely that you're going to have a break in the ranks, so to speak, mm-hmm. because you know there's skeletons that can be pulled out of the closet.
Well, since you're mentioning that, when was it? 3 years ago that Hunter Thompson died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now was he not somehow involved in photographing and perhaps even videotaping?
He was at Bohemian Grove, and he actually photographed. He actually did a snuff film of, and that was Lawrence King's little sex ring there, where they basically raped the child and then killed the child and then disposed of the body. And that might have been what led to Hunter Thompson's demise. It's been ruled a suicide. It's one of those things, though, where I'm not certain that the suicide that just doesn't close the case for me. I'm not willing to accept the final verdict on that.
Which is actually kind of interesting, because it's such a contrast to the murder that you opened with, and that was of the Father Kuntz, who was mm-hmm. very clearly murdered in a ritualistic fashion, as you say, perhaps to send a threatening message, whereas Hunter Thompson was covered up in the guise of a suicide.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that there's a possibility that he was dispatched, you know, that he was basically done away with because of what he knew, going back to the whole Omaha scandal, and the whole scandal surrounding
The Franklin Savings and Loan in Omaha.
Johnny Gosch and that whole story.
That whole story, and I think that I think that at some point he probably intended to write about at least Republican involvement in it because he was just so sick and tired of the Bush regime, and you know that could have led to a slippery slope where you know a whole lot of people would have ended up being exposed, and you know he was a security risk in my
now
estimation.
Now you're still talking about Thompson.
Yeah, Thompson.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now of course the Omaha connection was through Lawrence King, who was the guy behind the Franklin Savings and Loan. Mm-hmm. That had its tentacles stretch into the White House of the first George Bush. There was a Washington Times front page article in 1989. That,
Craig Spence.
That revealed how Craig Spence, who was a basically a high-priced man for hire, was bringing underaged boys that were in his circle of product into the White House at night for private tours of the personal residence, the private residence inside the White House, which is a place that is never open on tours.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
The question has to be asked, how then does Craig Spence, basically a prostitute, bring his boys into the White House, into the private residence of the president, without the – well, how does that happen? How does that happen? Craig Spence later turns up dead under mysterious circumstances, also another suicide. And the story, after a brief run in the Washington Times, kind of disappears and goes away. But Spence, Larry King, connected through the Franklin cover-up, the Franklin Credit Union in Omaha, to the highest levels of power in the Republican Party in the late 80s, early 90s. And again, some of those names were running in the same circles as these people in the CNP that you're talking about.
Yes, they are.
High-powered conservatives and high-powered, Republicans, guys like Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North.
Wasn't there a time just a while back when a whole bunch of, and I believe most of them were conservatives, Congress people decided not to run again or suddenly resigned. Am I remembering correctly on that?
This was, I think, 92 or 94. This was
time that things were starting to unravel on stories like this in Washington.
Yeah.
3, 4, 5 years ago. And about that same time or shortly after, I'm sorry, I'm not remembering the name of the gentleman who claimed he was Johnny Gosch.
Oh, Jeff Gannon.
Jeff Gannon.
Thank you very much. Someone who had access to the White House with press credentials.
And who was admittedly a man who had advertised himself in his services as a man for hire on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If I remember correctly, he was on a radio show. And he was not... I may have this wrong, so I apologize. He was on a radio show and talking about how he saying he was Johnny Gosch, and then Gosch's mother called in.
This was Michael. Well, you guys would know about this more.
Oh no,
Gosch's
mother was
Corbin,
being interviewed.
There was suspicion that he might be Johnny Gosch, and Bill Kennedy brought this up on Michael Corbin's show. And so Gannon kind of threatened a lawsuit, and Bill Kennedy was like, well, let's put this to rest right now. Take a polygraph and, you know, get up and give the results on the air. And Gannon never really went for it. He never really took.
Well, I think also they suggested a DNA test.
Yeah, that's true.
He would not submit himself to any of the tests to show whether or not he was Gosch, and it all goes back really to this whole thing goes back to Roy Cohn. I had the opportunity to interview over the phone last year James Rothstein. And James Rothstein is a legendary NYPD police detective. And most people might not know him, but he was the one cop that had guts to actually arrest Watergate burglar and JFK assassination player Frank Sturgis. He picked him up because he because Sturgis was on the way to kill Marita Lorenz, who had been sent by the CIA to kill Castro and then ended up shacking up with him for a few. And but
wait a minute, you can't just gloss over that.
How do you mean that, shacking up?
Well, she ended up having a romantic kind of involvement with Castro.
Oh,
and,
how about
and
that?
Basically had kind of turned the tables on her agency handlers. Not that she was a wonderful person. She is Jimmy, when I was interviewing him, said she's the most cold-blooded person that'd be able to kill you without even thinking about it. You know, but anyways, when Jimmy met with Roy Cohn. He met with Cohn because he was trying to get to the bottom of I believe it was two murdered boys, and through his contacts on the street in the pedophile and homosexual community, he found out that these boys their deaths led back to Cohn, and Cohn sat down with him and confidentially off the record just told Jimmy, he said, look, you know how this works. He's like, I bring in the boys, I bring in the children, and we compromise the politicians, and that's how we control these people. And he was doing it because of his dedication to anti-communism. But you know, higher up the chain than him, it was probably more, it's probably about control that actually transcends the whole East versus West dialectic, but what happened was that Cohn's whole operation passed on to Edwin Wilson and Frank Turkle, and Wilson and it was basically left on the dangle by his handlers in the agency when he got in trouble for selling C4 to Libya, and they made him look like a rogue, but in truth he had set up this he was running these blackmail operations for the director of operations at CIA, Shackley and Tom Clines, and over the years Shackley had come to take over Wilson's whole private intelligence network through Tom Clines. While Wilson would be away in Libya or in Iran doing business, Tom Clines would be running the whole show. So even after Wilson went away to prison, this whole operation continued, and continues up till. To this very day, where they basically, to keep people in line with the establishment agenda, you compromise them, you get them in a situation where they're filmed or photographed, or you know, it's known that they're involved in some kind of lurid sex practices, and if a person starts to step out of line, you expose them.
Well, you know, that it's said that that's one of the ceremonies that takes place in a Skull and Bones Society at Yale, is that during the initiation ceremony, the initiates have to reveal, he has to reveal his innermost sexual secrets.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's used as leverage later on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a tool, because you know, all of a sudden it's like, okay, now we're bound in a way like no other. Mm-hmm. And all. And you can't. You can't out me because I can out you, and you know, so we're all in the same boat here, and you know, one person is not going to be allowed to talk because he could burn down the whole house, and so naturally everybody else will come against him and make him look bad and basically, you know, pull out his skeletons. And they're all bound together by these dirty secrets that they have.
Now, you mentioned the CIA, and of course, one of the darkest episodes in several books and whose authors we've interviewed, Peter Lavenda, Dave McGowan, is the CIA, apparently CIA-connected group called the Finders, who came to light very briefly about 15 years ago when a couple of men were arrested in Tallahassee, Florida, with a group of children who looked like they hadn't been bathed in weeks. Mm-hmm. And
claimed they were taking them to a school in Mexico.
Yeah, a special school in Mexico. And these children were very young, five, six, 7 years old, but didn't appear to know what basic household items like telephones were for. And when they traced these guys back, they found a warehouse in Washington, D.C., in the Capitol, that showed evidence of they found photographs of children being sexually abused. They found photographs and evidence of ritualistic sacrifices of goats and other animals, and evidence that children were being procured for clients as far away as Hong Kong. And when the Metropolitan Police tried to pursue the investigation, they were called into the State Department and told this is shut down.
You cannot pursue this.
So we've got an intelligence connection there, and we've got an intelligence connection to the Gosch case in the Franklin cover-up, which again leads back to, the highest levels of political power in the United States. Father Alfred Kuntz connected to the CNP, which had connections to the highest levels of power on the conservative side, and also apparently investigating the ritualistic abuse by priests on the Roman Catholic Church side. Do we know what Kuntz and Fiore, or rather Father Charles Fiore, who was the CNP board member, do we know what specifically they might have been working on, or is there any evidence to suggest that they were about to reveal something so powerful that it required the murder of Father Kuntz?
Well, what we know is that the three of them, Fiore, Kuntz, and Martin, gotten together, and that they had basically began to share the information that they had each collected on their own. And like I said, they formed a little intelligence group, a group where, and they didn't refer to it as that, but that's exactly what it was three guys that got together, shared what they had in their own dossiers, analyzed what they had and came up with an analysis. And Martin in particular was sharing it everywhere. He was sharing it on every radio show that he could get on, and all three men were receiving death threats for the longest time. And with Fiore, he had the potential of building a bridge here, of tying the sex rings that existed within the Catholic Church to sex rings that exist within the political landscape here in America, because of his participation into the CMP. And let me try to build a little bridge right now. I brought up Roy Cohn, and I brought up the fact that Roy Cohn basically started this project. He basically started the sexual blackmail project, and then it was picked up by Wilson and continued on to the present day. Cohn was important because he ran Western Goals Foundation shortly after Larry McDonald died. John Singlob, who was a joint founder of Western Goals, was a CMP participant. J. Peter Grace was involved with Western Goals. Nelson Bunker Hunt, again another CMP participant, was a major contributor to Western Goals. And Daniel Graham and Mildred Jefferson, who were CMP participants, were also involved in Western Goals. And of course, Western Goals was what was left of it. The remnants of it was what would go on to form the CMP. So basically, you have this kind of. That's the bridge there between. I mean, you had Cohn heading up the Western Goals, and Cohn started this whole sex ring blackmail operation, and that's kind of the bridge that ties the CMP to these sex rings. One bridge. And all. I mean, now understand though that I'm not saying that the CMP is a monolithic conspiracy of sexual deviance. and all. But what it does is it's part of a network that provides cover for this sexually deviant subculture. And the cover is a cover of family values, of conservatism, the place that you would never ever expect for such activities to be going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got James Dobson who's affiliated with the CMP, and James Dobson, of course, you know, is the very popular Christian psychologist. But James Dobson promotes the work of Nicolosi. Joseph Nicolosi, and Joseph Nicolosi's his approach to trying to basically facilitate the abatement of the same-sex affinities that you have homosexuals exhibiting, his approach to it's known as reparative therapy, and basically this is how reparative therapy works. Nicolosi believes that if a father will just go into the shower with his son. His son, while he's in the shower, will discover that his father has the very same sex organs that he does. Now, how in the world that's supposed to prevent your child from ever, you know, exhibiting homosexual behavior, I don't know. And in fact, many people have taken issue with reparative therapy, even some Christians, saying that these bizarre practices really don't effectively prevent sexual confusion. So it really begs the question: is reparative therapy designed to actually cure or prevent the same-sex proclivities of homosexuals, or is it designed to seduce young children? Because it's all targeted towards young children. Why on earth Nicolosi believes that a father accompanying his son into the shower and showing him his sex organs would somehow prevent homosexuality is beyond me.
Another connection between the CMP and these deviant sex rings. You brought up earlier Oliver North, and Oliver North was a CMP participant. Mm-hmm. And what was found out through Paul Benanti's case, and we're right back to the Lincoln scandal, was that that one of the money men for Ollie North's whole Contra support apparatus was none other than Colonel Michael Aquino, who was the head of the Satanic Temple of Set, and this Satanic group basically got into some trouble at the Presidio for the molestation of children there.
Mm-hmm.
We had children of single digit age turning up with chlamydia and with a lot of different sexually transmitted diseases, and a lot of these children identified Michael Aquino and his wife Lilith and Gary Hambright as the individuals who had molested them, and so they had a whole kind of satanic sex ring going on within the Presidio, and this individual is basically helping Ollie North, and again Ollie North was a CMP participant.
Well,
was Aquino stationed in Omaha at the time of the whole scandal there?
That I cannot tell you. I know about his time. I don't remember. I've read DeCamp's book. I'd have to get back in and review it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've read it as well.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I do know that the military got very, very quiet about it. It was really funny with things at the Presidio. They said, well, we can't find evidence that Hambright or Aquino did anything, but you might want to have your children tested for AIDS. That's what they basically told these people, was the most in-your-face kind of offensive I mean, talk about adding insult to injury, yeah. You know.
Now, this is the kind of discussion that we've heard Michael Corbin have with guests that led us to create the original Wall of Paranoia, where we started connecting names together, because what we're seeing here, and we're only able to stretch out a few of these threads of this spider's web in the course of an hour, because there are so many names, so many interconnected, and much of the evidence is tangential. Well, we have this scandal here in which these participants were connected to other participants and basically you start drawing links between names, but you don't know the extent necessarily of those connections, or you know who was doing what with whom. Mm-hmm. I mean, it gets very nebulous, and it's by design. It's by design.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And I realize I sound like a raving conspiracy lunatic right now, you know, but the fact that there's not hard evidence proves that there's a conspiracy. But the fact is that you see a lot of these people running in circles together, and you have to ask the question, what ultimately is the grand design? As we're trying to see here, as we, you know, look through a glass darkly, mm-hmm. peer into darkness, as it were, because you know, through the CNP and its interconnections with the CFR, you got a lot of high-powered, wealthy individuals who, again, are not a monolithic conspiracy, but they move in the halls of power. They've got their hands right on the levers of power. Right. And when we look at these groups over and over again, we keep seeing these sex scandals that touch even the very heart of the American government, the White House. We see them. We see this happening in churches, especially the largest organized Christian church in the world, the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Go ahead, because when you start to peel the layers off the onion here, we just keep getting deeper and deeper into this. We keep finding that the threads connect further and further afield. What do you make of this? I mean, we step back and take a big look and try to draw us a big picture here.
Yeah, but let me try to draw a big picture in the remaining amount of time that we have left, okay? Malachi Martin, in his book, Keys of This Blood, wrote about what he called a superforce within the Catholic Church. And the superforce was basically an ecclesiastical version of a hostile corporate takeover team. It's basically the ecclesiastical version of what L. Fletcher Prouty called a secret team. And it was made up of people in key points within the Vatican and in the hierarchic structure, and they controlled the vital organs of the church worldwide. And Fiore, because of his CMP participation, was in a position to find out that CMP participants were members of groups that may constitute the superforce. For instance, William Simon and Frank Shakespeare, who were CMP participants, were also members of the Sovereign Military Order of the Knights of Malta. And we also know that J. Peter Grace, who was a CMP participant, he was the president of the Knights of Malta here in the United States. We know that Paul Weyrich, who was a major mover and shaker in the CMP, a CMP participant, was a member of Opus Dei. Opus Dei and the Knights of Malta are two groups that may make up this superforce within the Catholic Church. So by participating in the CMP, members of this superforce, this subversive organization, this network of subversive organizations within the Catholic Church, are able to extend their influence beyond the Catholic Church. So what does that mean? What would Fiore basically be able to show us because of his participation in the CMP? He would have been able to show us that the superforce was a lot larger and reached a lot farther than even Father Malachi Martin realized, and that superforce is actually active not only in the Catholic world but in the Protestant world as well, in that it's a lot larger, and that it is its umbrella covers covers the faithful worldwide, whether or not they are within the Catholic side of the Christian world or in the Protestant side of the Christian world. This super force has basically invaded the Christian world as a whole, Catholic and non-Catholic.
It's transnational, transcultural, and transdenominational. So it's pretty much universal. But what the CMP and the CFR and these other organizations do is they basically provide a network, a constellation of organizations, some weak, some strong, some secret, some semi-secret, some open, which is allows for a super force or a secret team to move and to achieve its goals and do so with impunity and with secrecy, because the entire chain, the entire network is protected from itself by its own compartmentalization.
And I would add it's also transdimensional.
Yeah,
and that is so true. You know what this reminds me of? Derek and I watched a bad movie last night about alien invasion of the Earth, and they were transforming the Earth by terraforming it.
Oh, you watched The Arrival.
Yes,
Charlie Sheen. Absolutely. Well, you know, this reminds
me. All four of us nerds were on the Sci-Fi Channel last night.
This reminds me of terraforming. I mean, you start an operation that is slow at first, small at first, but it gets to this tipping point.
Yeah, what it is it's going back to the Carbonari, and the Carbonari was basically one of these secret societies that said, look, don't destroy the Catholic Church. Get inside of it and rid it of its substance. Get rid of its substance, mm-hmm. and keep the externals and everything.
Yeah. Well, Antonio Gramsci, who was a socialist theoretician, who was eventually exiled by Stalin, he basically suggested, hey, you know, you're never going to remove religion from the picture, because man has this deeply embedded need to follow and worship something. So what we need to do is we need to basically keep all the Christian iconography and vernacular in place, but eviscerate it and jettison mm-hmm. all its metaphysical contents and use it as a vehicle for socialist rhetoric. So basically it's the same thing here. What you have is they're basically sucking out the guts, so to speak, of some legitimate institutions, and using those institutions as the vehicles for their own beliefs, for mm-hmm. their own agendas. They're just very pragmatic. They're pragmatists. Whatever works.
And what you have is then that you use, if you're a Catholic, you send your child off to a good Catholic what you thought was a good Catholic institution, and they come out subscribing to liberation theology. Or if you're a Protestant, you send them off to what you thought was a good Protestant institution, and they come out a raving dominionist. But the one thing that they don't come out is basically a legitimate follower of Jesus Christ. They don't come out, you know, with the gospel mm-hmm. being the foundation of anything they believe. They come out with this kind of mutated kind of it has some truth in it, but then it goes 180 degrees off.
It's a form of godliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's no substance there.
Yeah, rejecting the power thereof. So.
The Deep Politics of God, it's a series of articles that Paul Collins and Philip Collins have been writing together and individually. The most recent article, The Deep Politics of God, Revisited the Kuntz Murder, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes at PIDradio.com. And we'll also put a link to their archive of articles. Excellent work, researched and footnoted extensively, so you can follow up and not just take our word for it or their word for it, but you can follow up with the evidence and make up your own mind on whether there are things moving in the shadows just beyond the range of human perception. Paul and Philip Collins, thank you for joining us again on PID Radio.
Thanks for having us.
And the forum will be there for you to discuss this and share your thoughts about this, kick around questions for us or for the Collins brothers. There will be a link at PIDradio.com. And, of course, our email addresses are always open as well if you've got questions for us directly. Derek@peeringintodarkness.com.
And Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com. By the way, if you do send us email, I sometimes get notes that are addressed to many, many people at the same time. Those go instantly to my junk filter, through my junk filter into it. And I sometimes don't even see them. I look at the junk folder, you know, once a month or something. So if you send us a note, send it to us only or just to a couple of people because they get bumped.
The mass mailings, that's one of the things the junk filter will torch. So thank you again for spending this hour with us. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
And analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.